Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and happy Monday. I know Monday is just always the hardest day. It doesn't matter what your job is or where you are, Monday automatically just brings, you know, feelings of, oh my goodness, it's Monday. But we have got an encouraging Monday for you here on the show. And in fact, we've got a really great week planned for you. Tomorrow on the show, I'll be talking about vaping. We've got two fantastic authors on later in the week, Molly Stillman and Allie Worthington. Friday, we'll have an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama where I'm talking all things tech and sleepovers. You won't want to miss it. And I hope that you have jumped in on our 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. This week, we'll be talking about affirmation, how much our kids need it, how they crave it, and how it's so important for us as parents to leverage that tool with them, to use affirmation as a bonding agent and to really cement our influence in their hearts. When we give them affirmation, it goes a long, long way. So giving that specific positive praise, listen in on Friday. I'll be talking about that. You won't want to miss it. But today we have got a friend back on the show. If you missed her first appearance, we're talking about Summer Colbert. She was on the show on February 19th. So if you missed what is essentially going to be part one of this conversation about foster care and adoption, go back and download the podcast from February 19th. She shared her own personal story of fostering to adopt, and now she is a writer, a speaker, and she is the director of adoption and foster care ministry at Cross Church, and she's the champions coordinator for the Arkansas Baptist Children and Family Ministries. She knows more than anybody I've ever met about adoption and foster care, and she is so passionate about equipping spiritually healthy families and seeing a movement of God's people step into confidence and their ability to change the world around them through the way they love. She lives in Arkansas with her husband, her three kids, and her three dogs. And Summer, we're just so thrilled to have you back on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend. It is such an honor to be back with you.
Well, on part one, we talked about your journey to become not only a foster mom, an adoptive mom, but actually now that's your whole calling in life. That's your job, is to help other people do the same thing. And we answered some important questions, Summer, that families often have, that we feel God moving in our hearts to do this, but where do we start? How much does it cost? How long will it take? What is the trauma going to be like? Is it still worth it in the end? So if you missed part one, go back again, listen to that February 19th episode. But Summer, I told you at the time, like, I feel like we didn't even touch the surface. We didn't even start by talking about all the questions I have. So I've got a lot of different questions. Right. So we're going to go a different direction. And I am just going to, let's just do a like kind of a brief recap. So you have said, and you've written about this, that there are six truths about adoption. Can you walk us through those and tell us what those are as we think about where we are and where we're going?
Absolutely. Yes. This is something that, as I had shared in our previous conversation, things that I really wish I knew and understood better when God first called us to this journey. And so I'm happy to share this in hopes that anyone who is wrestling with this calling right now, it just might be an encouragement to you as you consider taking steps forward. But really, each of these six truths are all about mindset and establishing your mindset as you're going into this. And so the first one is very simply that adoption is messy. You know, we have this idea of this curated image of what adoption is, and it's this beautiful, magical experience of either a baby showing up in a gilded basket on our front porches or, you know, flying overseas somewhere to have a child run into your arms and embrace you as their parents. But the fact of the matter is that adoption is the result of brokenness in families. And so therefore, it's going to be messy. And there's so many different components to that messiness. But it's really helpful for us not to to be a Debbie Downer and to just really discourage them, to help you to understand that there's so many different facets and there's so many different big feelings, and there's, you know, generational pain, and there could be addiction, there could be mental illness, there could be poverty, there could be all of these different components that comprise the scenario where a child is in need of a forever family. And so when we understand kind of a 30,000 foot view, if you will, or a bigger picture concept of who this child is and the family that is connected with this child coming into your family, I think it's going to help us deal a little bit more with the messiness and even the unpredictability of adoption processes. And the second component, the second truth, is the fact that it's not about me. And I say me, I make that very personal. And so you say that to yourself, like, when God calls you to do this, it's not about self-fulfillment. And it is a wonderful experience to welcome a child into your family, whether it's through foster care or adoption. But this is just as much about that child's story and that child's family story as it is your own. And so it draws back to that bigger picture perspective that we have of, we're not seeking self-fulfillment. We really are seeking to answer a calling to love a child and a family that the Lord has led us to. The third truth is this adoption really is stewardship. You know, our kids are not ours, no matter how they join our family. They are not given to us by the Lord to keep forever. They are actually given to us to raise in the instruction of the Lord, and then to be launched out into the world as effective difference makers for the gospel in their own unique ways. And so we hold our kids loosely in the sense of understanding that they are the Lord's beautiful and perfect creation as they are, and it is our privilege to steward them as we prepare to launch them out into the world to see God write their own unique story. And it's just an honor to be a part of that. And so it takes this ownership component out, and it really has a stewardship mindset that it's very freeing in a lot of ways, especially when you are dealing with kiddos who come from trauma, who come from really difficult pasts, who don't always make the choices that you would hope for them as they grow and as they wrestle with their own story and their own experiences. The fourth truth, I would say, and this was something that, was so hard for us and has been over 10 years of different processes, and it's the truth that God is sovereign over who he places in your family and how he chooses to do that. And Jessica, you know this about our story, but in 10 years, we have 9 different processes. And of those 9 different processes, we're also talking about inquiries for multiple sibling groups, for literally children all over the world that we saw a picture and gave our hearts to, thinking, okay, this must be the child. You know, God keeps calling us, and so this must be our child, or this must be our children. And each time, with the exception of one, that was not our assignment. Those children proved to not be our assignment. And so there was a lot of grief. There was a lot of heartache and confusion and disappointment with that. But we had to keep coming back to the truth that God is sovereign. And not only is he sovereign in the calling that he placed on us, but he was sovereign in the results as well. And that's a really, really hard truth to wrestle with, and can cause us to really question even the goodness of God. But we have to remember that his goodness is not determined by a certain result that we expect, because the calling of adoption is not always going to end in the way that we expect. I tell my families all the time, it is predictably unpredictable. You never know. But the fact is that God is sovereign no matter what the result is on the other side of that. Truth number 5 is that because of the unpredictability of it and the grief and all of the different things that you wrestle with, adoption is refining. And, you know, we are all in, as believers, we are in a lifelong sanctification process. And I will tell you that adoption will bring out areas of your sin nature and your fleshly tendencies that you may not have otherwise been aware of. And I can say that hand raised in all honesty. I mean, it brought out ugly in me that I had no clue. And so with that, though, if there's so much good that comes on the other side of pushing through that calling and understanding that you are being refined as you walk through this calling. I mean, practical things like it stretches your patience far beyond what you could ever anticipate. It will stretch and refine your faith and your trust in the Lord. And as I mentioned earlier, it opens your eyes and your heart to people who live life entirely different than you and that you might otherwise, you know, have avoided or Lord forbid, been judgmental of. And so it's going to refine you in that way, and it's going to pull you out of your comfort zone and require a surrender on a whole new level that you might not have experienced. And then lastly, Jessica, that truth would be adoption is an invitation to love. And when I use that word love, something that the Lord gave us fairly early on in our journey, my husband was actually listening to a podcast and he came across the word ahava. And that is the Hebrew word for love. And when you dive into that word, the root word is ahav, A-H-A-V, and that means to give. And so that was a reminder for us and a word that the Lord used to really help us to understand that love is not fulfillment, it's not feelings, love is an action. And it is an ongoing and lifelong commitment to grow, to adapt, and to learn how to love in ways that may not have come naturally for us. And it is an intentional and purposeful mindset of showing up and doing what it takes to love and steward our kids every single day that the Lord has given us.
Well, Summer, you speak from a place where you know, because you've done this, just like you said, 10 years was your journey. And you shared with us before that you sold your house to finance this. That's how deep your conviction was. And, you know, I think about the things that you've just shared, these six truths that it's messy. It's not about us as parents. It's a stewardship that God is sovereign over all of it, that he is refining us, and that it is an invitation to love. You know what's beautiful about that, Summer, is that that doesn't matter if you're a foster parent or an adoptive parent or a biological parent. That is the essence of the journey of parenting. And, you know, but there just seems something so much more intentional about choosing to foster or adopt. And, you know, when I was president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, I started an organization under them called the Alliance for Children in Trafficking. And we wanted to model that for other populations. And I'm so proud that one of the groups that I started before I left was the Alliance for Children in Foster Care, where we wanted to equip pediatric nurse practitioners as primary care providers who were meeting these families, because you know better than I do, even Summer, that families who present for primary care like that, who have kids who have been adopted or in the foster care system, they have very unique needs that other families are not going to see. And as I was in Denver last week for the conference for this group, and I saw the woman who's chairing the Alliance for Children in Foster Care, and I said, "Hey, how many kids are in foster care in the United States right now about?" And she said, "Oh, 391,098 plus or minus, you know, depends on what the report was." She knew exactly what the last statistic was. But the truth is, there's almost 400,000 kids in foster care, and there's over 50,000 adoptions from the last, you know, record that I could pull up. So even if you're not a family who is experiencing personally that foster or adoption care journey, you know someone who is. They're in your church. Mm-hmm. They're in your school. They're in your neighborhood. And so this, I don't want listeners to tune out and think, "Oh, that's not me." I also, Summer, don't want listeners to tune out thinking, "Oh no, this is my sign. I've been convicted about this and praying about this. And here is the Lord again coming to me across the radio saying, this is you." But Summer, we're coming up on a break here, but there are a lot of questions that I have to ask you. So I'm going to give our listeners a preview of things that we'll be talking about for the rest of the show. I'm going to ask you, just as a heads up here for our listeners, I'm going to ask you about open versus closed adoption. I'm going to ask you about birth parents changing their mind. I'm going to ask about interracial adoption and what we say that can be helpful or harmful, because there are some things that we can say that are really well-intentioned, but that can really hurt a family who is going through this journey. We'll also talk about meeting their biological parents, like that fear and anxiety they have, like as they get older. And we'll talk about the landscape of adoption changing and the aftermath of the overturning in Roe versus Wade. So you can see there is a lot more to come. You don't want to miss the answers to those questions from Summer. So stay tuned as we talk with Summer Colbert. And you can find her on Instagram at Summer Colbert or at summercolbert.com. S-O-M-E-R-T. ERCOLBERT.com. We'll be right back after this break. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband had decided they never wanted kids. And when she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby Jeffrey is healthy and beautiful, and Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey friends, welcome back to my conversation with Summer Colbert. She's the Director of Adoption and Foster Care Ministry at Cross Church and Champions Coordinator for the Arkansas Baptist Children and Family Ministries. And I had her on the show on February 19th, so go and download all of those questions, that episode that will answer a lot of your questions, but I had more questions. And Summer, I'm just going to jump right back in here because there are families right now who are considering adoption, and many of them will think about it for years or for months before they take those steps to get started. And even if you're thinking, this is not me, I'm not going to adopt, I just said before the break, there are about 500,000 kids, 500,000 kids who are going to have an adoptive or foster care experience. You know someone who's impacted by this. But one thing that potential adoptive parents consider, Summer, is an open versus a closed adoption. Can you explain each one of those pathways?
Yes, absolutely. So closed adoption is just very simply, there is no contact with the child's biological parents or family in any way. And that really was the norm for many, many years, up until just the last decade or so, I would say. It has become more prevalent to actually shift to more of an open adoption model. But closed adoption is just simply no contact whatsoever. Some agencies will hold records until a child is a certain age, whether that is 18 years old or 21 years of age, so that information is available to them if they choose to seek that out. But otherwise, it really is just a closing of that relationship with the biological family and moving on with your relationship as an adoptive family. Now, with open adoption, there really are various levels of openness. And if you're looking into particular agencies, some of those actually now only, they require open adoptions. They do not do closed adoptions because they are trying to equally advocate for the biological family as much as the adoptive family. And so that is something that is oftentimes overseen by a caseworker within their staff as an agency. They oversee introductions between the families once a match has been made. Many times, and with most organizations that I'm aware of at this point, the birth mother, the expectant mother, has the ability to choose the family that she would like to place her child with. And so a lot of times you see in the adoption process, you'll create a life book that will have just pictures of you and your family and information that the mother can consider as she chooses what family to place with. And so she has that ability to kind of get to know you as a family even before you ever even have met her. And then the agencies or attorneys or whatever organization you're working with in the matching process will facilitate introductions. And those can be really, really awkward. I know we experienced that in getting to know our birth mom, but I have to tell you what a gift it was. And I also have to be really honest with you. I was terrified. And so I hear your fears. My brain tends to go to the worst case scenarios and the worst of the worst and the scariest of the scary. But the vast majority of our biological families in this situation just want to know that their kids are being cared for, that they have a good future, and that they know that their biological parents love them. And so it really isn't as scary as you would imagine. Now, going back to the different ideas of open adoption, a lot of times it is a choice that is decided upon between the families. Certainly safety has to be considered, and organizations will look into that in terms of the level of safety for communication, for ongoing relationship. I have some families who it's just a requirement that they send a picture, you know, every month or every 6 months, or they send a report once a year to the agency and they share that on with the biological family. Other organizations require a certain number of visits or a certain number of phone calls so that families can stay in connection with their biological families. And so it is something that when you are considering adoption and you choose a particular route, whether it's an agency, a private attorney situation, you need to ask those questions up front and ask, what are the expectations of the biological family and what type of involvement would they like to have with this child as time goes on? Now, certainly, you can decide upon one thing, and then if you grow to trust the family and then that level of openness increases, then that is something that I see happen quite a bit. There are families who get together for children's birthdays every year and they celebrate, or they get together for the holidays and they celebrate. And it really is a beautiful thing, and it becomes an expansion of your own family. And it is something that I think is so good and amazing when it is safe and appropriate to do so. I think it is always wise to get as much information as you can about the biological family as you agree to say yes to a particular match or a particular placement. But those details aren't always readily available, and they do change. And so open communication with your agency or organization of choice is key, and choosing a trusted one as well as you navigate what is the best pathway for your family.
Well, Summer, for many adoptive families, you know, one of the things that makes parents have fear and anxiety, and for some good reasons, are children getting older and finding their biological parents, which is interesting to think about the trend of more open adoptions where they know who their biological parents are, but then there are other children who don't. And with the advent of commercial DNA services, genealogy is a hobby. I mean, this is really easy for kids to do with or without their parents' knowledge or even consent, especially as they get older. And what wisdom can you share with us here? Let's start with that open adoption model, how we can talk to kids about what their family structure looks like, because it clearly is going to look different from a lot of other kids that they may encounter, all the way along that continuum to finding their biological parents as they get older.
Yes, it's such a good question, and something that it goes back to just having a very open-handed approach to your child's journey, because every single child is unique in the way that they are going to interpret their adoption experience and interpret the need for the adoption in the first place. Some families are so fortunate that, and we've been very blessed, where I was able to go to 3 months of with our daughter's mother prior to her giving birth. And so we were able to spend that time together, and I was able to observe her personality and just her little quirks and her amazing things about her that I can now share with my daughter. But some families don't have that luxury. I was just sitting and having lunch with a friend a couple of weeks ago. She's 35 years old. She's an adult adoptee. She actually reached out to her biological mother based on the limited information that she had from her adoption agency in another state, and her birth mother declined any type of contact. And so you really don't know what that's going to look like. And so it really is being prepared for what you really don't know what is coming. And so I have full confidence that the Lord will lead you in wisdom as you navigate that individually with your child. But as much as in your power and control, I would say, work hard throughout the rearing of your child to build trust between your child and yourself as their parent. And so that especially when they get to those tough years, those formative years, the teen years of really kind of, you know, flexing a little bit in their independence and their shifting of their worldview, they're coming into their own. And there's a lot of things, including stored trauma, that can be revisited in those years as their bodies are changing and their minds are developing and growing more. We have to be prepared to hold that loosely. One of my friend that I had lunch with, she said, please tell your parents who have teenagers right now that are adopted, whatever we say, we don't mean it. And I thought that is so profound, because she remembers times where she was, you know, she would yell at her mom and say, well, you're not my mother, or she would be frustrated out of just different life experiences. And so you're naturally going to lash out at that person that is closest to you. And so I share all that just to say, be prepared for all of that and try not to take it personally, as hard as that is, because you can fall back into this mindset very easily of, I'm the one who wanted you. I'm the one who did all this work to bring you into our family. I'm the one who raised you. I was the one who was up nights when you were sick. Fill in the blank, whatever that might look like. But that doesn't discount the fact that there is another family who will always and forever be connected to your child. And so as much as you are able to speak well of that family in any way possible, that is a blessing to your child. As much information as you can give them in a safe way, that is a gift to them. As much as you can tell them at an age and developmentally appropriate level, that is a gift to them, because children will formulate their own stories and their own reasons for why their life looks the way that it does. So the more that we can fill in those gaps with what is true and in a loving way to the best of our ability, the better our kids are going to be able to cope with their story and work through that. And the other thing that I will say that I think is really important, that again, this friend of mine shared with me, she said, you know, my adoptive mom is not responsible for the way that I dealt with and interpreted my story. She has a sister who was also adopted. Her sister was adopted out of the foster care system. She herself was adopted privately from a private attorney organization, adoption, and they were raised in the same home by the same parents. They were taught the same truth. They were raised in church, you know, raised the exact same way, and she has taken one path, and her sister has taken an entirely different one. And so we as parents do our due diligence to do what we know is right, to bring our children up biblically and with the extra effort of understanding their story, their trauma, what they need to thrive. But beyond that, our kids do make their own choices in how they wrestle with and interpret their story. And so giving them freedom to do that and unconditional love to do that is going to be a tremendous blessing for them as well. And pray, pray, pray that the Lord will capture and hold onto their hearts throughout every step of their process.
That is such good advice, Summer. I mean, so much wisdom packed into what you said there. And I can affirm that, you know, from my perspective, just as a pediatric nurse practitioner and a mom myself, it's so important, no matter what your kid's situation, to be honest with them. We cannot lie to our kids to protect them. A better approach would be to say, that is information I cannot share with you at this time. But when I can share it, when it is safe and when it is appropriate to do so, you can keep asking me and I will tell you. I can't tell you yet. I can't tell you yet. But just knowing that, you know, you are withholding information, but for their good and with intention, that is a lot different than telling them something that's not true. Because then you really back yourself into a corner, Summer, thinking, well, yeah, that wasn't true, but I was justified in telling you it wasn't true. But they need to know
right.
that everything that you tell them is going to be true. And this is hard. So I want to go back to the beginning of the journey, Summer. What advice do you have for parents or grandparents, friends, family, teacher, church members, anyone else who is in this foster or adopted child circle about how to talk to them about their family or their situation? You know, Summer, I think about like little kid insults when kids are insulting each other, even brothers and sisters. I know my own kids, like one of the things they would say to each other is, oh, you're adopted. Like that was like the worst thing ever, you know? And I remember one of my kids coming to me and saying, are you lying to me? Like, am I adopted? And, you know, that we have to watch how we talk about it, just general and narratives. Like our family didn't even have, we didn't have an encounter with an adoption situation at all. But when and how should children be told? And what are things that those of us in the peripheral circle can be really aware of in saying or not saying?
Absolutely. That's such an important question. And it is important to remember. It's really a fine balance too, Jessica, because when parents are called to adopt, it really is their own personal calling. And you have to step out sometimes in uncomfortable ways without the support of your family who might not yet understand. And so, you know, prayerfully, when the Lord is prompting you towards this, you're going to have people in your life that the Lord is going to provide who can speak life into your calling, because it is so hard. So I will say for, you know, family members, friends, church members, please be there for those people in your life that are walking this journey. They need you desperately. They need your support. They already know that this is messy and hard, but they feel compelled by God to do it anyway. And so be there, pray for them constantly, and learn alongside them and offer support wherever you can. Now, when it comes to children asking questions, I think probably the best advice I could give is to say, that is a really great question. I think it's best to ask mom and dad that question, because you don't want to overshare information that adoptive parents are not quite ready to share. As you were just talking about, it might not be safe to share that yet. It might not be age appropriate or developmentally appropriate. And they could be essentially opening a can of worms that mom and dad weren't ready to open yet. And so I think, out of respect for the adoptive parents, the best approach is to say, that is such a good question. Let's ask mom and dad, even together. And that way they don't feel shut off or shut down with that question, but you can kind of usher them into conversation and give that soft and respectful handoff to the adoptive parents to kind of take lead on that and go from there. Now, I think also additionally, in terms of the things that we can say that are hurtful, it really does take an acute awareness. And you want to balance that, because you don't want to be walking on eggshells around your family and around your friends or around their kids who are adopted, because kids pick up on that. If there's discomfort in the air, kids are little barometers. They're going to pick up on that. And then they're going to interpret, oh, something's wrong about me. And so you really want to be careful in that and try to, you know, just operate in a way that is just very welcoming and very peaceful and confident in their place in the family unit, in the church unit, in the friend unit, whatever, you know, community you find yourself in, but also deferring to the expertise and the answer of the biological parents. Speaking well, speaking words of life always, being aware of any type of just inadvertent hurtful comments, whether it's related to race or culture or socioeconomic level or just anything along those lines that might be construed as hurtful or be misunderstood. You know, I think as believers, that's something that we should be aware of anyway, right, Jessica? I mean, we don't need to be making thoughtless comments as believers. We need to guard our tongues and guard our speech. And so if we are practicing that self-discipline anyway, you know, guarding the tongue based on James chapter 4, then we're going to be good. But deferring, I think, is the best thing to do, and allowing adoptive parents to take the lead in answer to your question.
And I think, you know, that just asking questions, if you're a Sunday school teacher or a teacher or you're having this child, it's great to initiate conversation with the parent and say, tell me about your child's understanding of their situation and how I can be helpful, how I can come alongside you. What is said and what messages can I reinforce with you? How can I partner with you? Don't be afraid to ask that awkward conversation. And you know, at first they may say, oh, I don't know, like I don't know if I'm going to tell you that yet, but they know that invitation is there. I think it's really important to open that door to conversation. When we come back, we'll talk about interracial adoption. I got lots of questions, Summer. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, to my conversation with Summer Colbert. She's the Director of Adoption and Foster Care Ministry at Cross Church. If you want to hear how she created that unique position, go back and listen to our episode on February 19th. And she is the Champions Coordinator for the Arkansas Baptist Children and Family Ministries. Now, Summer, this is what you do full time. Like, this is your job. This is your church ministry that you do. And it's also your ministry platform. You used to have Love Where You Are, but now you are just focusing on foster care and adoptive care and helping families through that journey. Tell families where they can connect with you and what kind of services you provide.
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram, as Jessica shared, at Summer Colbert. You can also find me at summercolbert.com. It's kind of a hub for all of the things. And then I host a weekly podcast on the Christian Parenting Podcast Network, and it is called Call to Love. And we discuss all things adoption, foster care, trauma, the calling itself, and I answer listener questions and try to just take a really personalized approach to walk alongside families who are living out this calling with me. So we have a great time over there, and I would love to hear from you and to have you join us over at Call to Love.
So when I had you on the first time, Summer, like I told you, I had so many more questions, and you just shared with me, you launched in September and already have 30 episodes, 30 where you're just talking about this. So if this is your community, this is your life story, this is your journey, go find Summer, because you can find so much encouragement there. But for all the rest of us, Summer, let's talk about interracial adoption. That could be international or domestic, of course. And this is a really complicated dynamic. And I know from my experience as a healthcare provider, there are a lot of parents who are very well intended, but ill-prepared for the realities of that. What advice do you have for families who are considering or perhaps already in this situation?
Oh, that's so good. Yes. My first advice is don't be afraid to ask for advice. It really is so important to lean into your child's community of origin, to learn as much as you can on the front end or just during, because you never know what timing of placement and, you know, adoption can be crazy. And all of a sudden you find yourself with a child of a different race or ethnicity, and you've got a lot of questions. And so lean into that, make phone calls, reach out to others who can answer those questions and allow them to speak into and understand that that's not offensive. They welcome that. And they're so excited to offer that advice so that you and your child can thrive as you learn different things. For example, for the African-American community, there are certain ways that their hair must be cared for, and there are certain places of business that can really meet you in what products they might need in caring for their skin. My daughter in particular is Pacific Islander, and there is a high occurrence of eczema and different skin issues, and so we had to dive into that, and we had to lean into our community here locally in Northwest Arkansas to say, hey, what's the best way to take care of her skin? Get them plugged into their community. We were able to go just a couple of years ago. There's a celebration in our city downtown, and they call Stroll the Atolls. And it is just a celebration of the Marshallese culture and community. And we were able to take our daughter, and she was able to see others that look like her. We were able to dive into more details about her culture and see jewelry making and dancing and a fashion show. And she just lit up. It was so incredible for her to be able to do that. Try to cultivate friendships with others in your community who have children who share their race and ethnicity so that they don't feel isolated. My friend that I mentioned in our last segment, Jessica, she is biracial, and she really does not know her exact ethnicity. And so she dealt with a lot of comments when she was growing up because she was raised by a family who was white, and she was biracial. And she said she got called things like whitewashed, and there were other words that were used to identify her. And so she really struggled in her identity. And so she wished that she had others that she could lean into who had a similar experience, who came from the same type of story that she did or looked like her. So if we can do that for our kids, I think that that is a huge, huge blessing for them. Something else, if you have the ability to understand your child's family biology in terms of genetics, and so maybe health issue that their family line might have had to deal with, that's really, really helpful information so that you can be proactive in their health records and their health care going forward and anything that you might not anticipate. So those are just some practical ways. I think the other part of it, and I can speak to this as a mom with a child of a different ethnicity than myself, you forget because they truly, it's just my child. But there are instances where we will go to different parts of the country or different parts of our own state even, where I don't understand why when we walk in a restaurant, everybody's looking at us funny, and I have to go, oh, wait. We have a child with us that doesn't look like us. And so you've got to be prepared for those looks. You've got to be prepared, quite frankly, for ignorant questions that could be perceived as hurtful. And so I like to encourage families to remember, don't walk around with a chip on your shoulder on behalf of your child. Instead, be prepared with a gentle and loving answer, but also don't be afraid to put boundaries on what you're willing to answer when people do ask. And it really is a posture of preparedness with your responses that are loving, that are Christ-honoring, but that are also protective of your child and your family. You are not obligated to overshare your child's story or anything about them, you can decline to do so respectfully in a way that is still honoring to the Lord. But I would say be as prepared as you can on the front end with this type of information. And if you know that you're expecting a child, maybe through infant adoption, that you know is going to be a different race, do your homework now, because once that baby gets here, you are going to have your hands full and you're going to have a lot going on. And so the more you can do on the front end. And the other advice that I would give is be open to your child's questions. As soon as they start asking questions, be prepared to answer them and walk alongside your child in their journey as they go. So if they've got a particular question that you don't have an answer to, say, let's find out together. Let's ask those questions together and become a student of your child with your child of that journey. And I think that will be an incredible help to you as you navigate that interracial parenting.
That, again, so much helpful advice. I feel like I need to like rewind you and listen for like 5 seconds and write everything down, because you packed so much wisdom and practical advice, and just, it just rolls off the tip of your tongue, Summer. I mean, you can tell this is something that you have lived and that you are now so passionate about. And this is just so helpful for the rest of us. Can you compare and contrast some helpful and harmful things to say to children and their parents about this? Because just like you said, I mean, you shared some insensitive things. I have seen and heard this many, many times. And I think one of the things you said that was really important was equipping kids to not feel obligated to answer that or to overshare, or giving them permission to say, I'd prefer not to talk about that, or I'm not going to answer that. Have a nice day. You know, what can you give advice more about helpful and harmful things, and then say more about empowering our kids, those kids, to respond?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it starts with giving them confidence in who they are and their story, and understanding that adoption does not equal shame. Adoption is something to be celebrated. I mean, you have to remember, their biological parents were brave enough to choose life, and we celebrate that. And if you know nothing else about that child's biological family or their story, you can celebrate the fact that their parents chose life. And so we always want to spin anything that's negative or hurtful to something that is a celebration, because they are uniquely created by God for a purpose, and God has, you know, a good future for them, hope in a future, right, from the book of Jeremiah. And so we want to point everything back to that. I think also giving our kids language that they can utilize when things are hurtful, so emotional language. And so kids might not even really understand the depth of something that is said to them that might sting a little bit, but then it can fester, and it can really, bitterness can take root as they grow. And especially as I was, you know, talking about in our last segment about the teen years, and in ways that they can really be challenged. You know, if we can give our kids emotional language now, and really the freedom to be able to come to us and talk about something that little Johnny or little Susie said at school today, that might just have hit a little bit funny, or they didn't quite understand what they were saying, if they've got the ability to process that with you as their parent, that is going to be extremely helpful, because then you can pour back in that life-giving advice and to counter any lies that the enemy might be trying to take root in their own hearts. Because you have to remember, just because they're kids, the enemy's not going to leave them alone. And so he's going to attack their identity just as much as he's going to attack our identity as adults. And so we want to counter that with the power and authority that God has given us over our children, and the protection that we have over our kids, that spiritual authority and that spiritual protection. And so let your kids see you praying over them and with them and rebuking in any lies that are spoken to them. I think that is huge, and something that, whether because they're biological, adopted, or foster, what have you, we need to be employing that regularly as parents, giving that emotional language to identify what was said, talk out what was wrong about it, and then equip them with respectful and confident rebuttals, if you will, as you mentioned in your question. I think that is absolutely huge. I think, unfortunately, we live in a sinful world where kids are just mean, and adults are just mean, and they say mean and hurtful and ignorant things. And so as believers, we've got to be prepared in season to give a confident but loving answer, and the ability, like, give your child permission to step away from a situation. Give your child permission to stick their hand out in front and say, that's not appropriate, I'm not going to receive that from you right now, and step away. Give them the voice to be able to go to whoever is in authority in that situation, whether it's school, church, or in the home, to go to that caregiver and identify what has taken place and make sure that they have a voice. We don't want to see our kids bullied into a corner and struggling with their identity as they grow and develop and process their stories. And so we've got to give them freedom of voice. We've got to give them confident rebuttals, and we've got to give them the ability to share what has gone on and what is continually going on in their story and in their minds and hearts.
So, so good. I feel like you gave us like a sermon packed there in 2 minutes. Like, it's just so much wisdom. And so many things you said are so important, because I agree with you. Those little things that can happen over time, if they're not processed appropriately, they can cause a root of bitterness to grow. And it doesn't matter if they're adopted or not. That's for any kid. And one of the tools that we use in my family that I've shared often here is at dinner time together, we asked, what are the highs and the lows and the where did you goes, and tell me about your day. It's so important to say it that way, not how was your day, because we're acculturated to say fine, it was fine. But we say, tell me about your day. And then knowing that high and that low, that gives me a little bit of an insight to say, oh, I need to go and root that out a little bit more. I also loved what you said about respectful and confident rebuttals. That should be like trademarked. That's exactly what we should say. That's not okay to say that. And, you know, I'm going to walk away from this conversation. So I think equipping them to know when and how to say that, and then come back and process it with you so that you can help them with that and follow up. But one of the things I love that you said the most was just spinning a negative, not to a positive, but to a celebration, and a celebration of choosing life. And Summer, I want to ask you in our last 5 minutes or so here together, what ways do you see the landscape of adoption changing in the aftermath of the overturning of Roe versus Wade?
Yeah, you know, that was such a celebration that we had as a community of believers, and something that we've been praying for decades, right? And we saw that. And I think there was maybe an unexpected assumption that we were going to have this massive influx now of babies who are readily available for adoption. And numerically and statistically, that has not been the case. We still see, on average, I think I'd heard the quote was that there are 1 million babies aborted on average per year, but there are 2 million families on the adoption waiting list in our country alone. And so there really isn't, I mean, there are parents who are waiting, right? And so what we do see is there are still a strong establishment of social services where families are choosing to parent, but sometimes they are just not able to do so successfully. And so we are still seeing the large number of kids in need of adoption coming through the foster care system. And you had mentioned those statistics. And yes, rough numbers, it's about 400,000 kids per year that come into care, and anywhere between 50 and 100,000 of those kids need forever families through adoption. And so while there's always opportunity in different situations for babies to be placed through adoption, we do still see that greater need coming through the foster care system if permanency is what you're seeking.
And that is one of the criticisms that we hear, that we need to support mothers, babies, and families across the lifespan, and that includes foster care. And we just have about a minute left, Summer. What last words would you give to families to encourage them who are considering fostering or adopting a child?
I would say that the need is immediate, it's ongoing, and it's urgent. If you feel compelled to serve in this way, to be a part of the restoration of families and the availability to be a family for a child, then I would encourage you to take steps. And, you know, you mentioned the time frame. Sometimes people pray about this for months and years on end. If the Lord is speaking to you, I would urge you to take action and just see what the Lord does. Going back to that sovereignty conversation, a yes on the table is always honored by the Lord, and He will guide and direct your steps in who He wants you to serve as a family.
Amen, amen, and amen. And that was just so encouraging. You can find her at summercolbert.com. That's SOMERCOLBERT.com for more information about fostering. And yes, we are about the restoration of families. I know when I worked as a professor, I worked on a grant where we would go into homes and teach parents how they could be parenting skills to reunite with their families. And we know that that is God's heart for the family to be together. Well, that is it for today. Join us tomorrow. I'm going to give you some updates you need to know about vaping. Yep, that's it. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.